Who Can Deny Love? By Barbara Cartland. Read by George Waitman for Saga Egmont. Chapter 1. 1802. The Marquis of Fane drove his superfine horses down St. James's Street, conscious that his enemies and many of his friends were watching him with envious eyes. It was not only because of his horses that the Marquis aroused envy, jealousy, and other violent emotions in people's hearts. He was too good at everything to be anything but a controversial figure, and it was not surprising that he had a bad, positively raffish reputation even amongst those who circulated round the Prince of Wales. As a sportsman, the Marquis commanded the respect of the sporting world, but he also infuriated those who competed against him in horse racing, because he was so cocksure of being the winner that they felt it was almost unfair that he should pass them at every winning post. In other types of sport, especially where it concerned the fair sex, inevitably the Marquis captured the most beautiful women from under the noses of friend and foe alike. He was reputed to have left more broken hearts behind him than any beau in the last century. His conquests at times annoyed even the Prince of Wales. "I cannot understand what they see in you, Fane," he had remarked disagreeably only a week ago. This was when he learnt that a dancer who had caught his eye on the stage at Covent Garden was already under the Marquis's protection. His Royal Highness did not expect a reply to his question, because the answer was obvious. The Marquis was not only extremely handsome, but extraordinarily wealthy, and possessed houses containing treasures that his family had accumulated since the reign of Queen Elizabeth. That he was also self-sufficient, cynical, and declared openly that he had never been in love proved an irresistible challenge to women. "There is no female born who does not wish to reform a rake," one of the older members at White's Club had said the previous evening. "But where Fane is concerned, they might as well try to stop a forest fire with a bucket of water." This remark was evoked by the news that Lady Isabel Chatley had left London owing, the newspapers said, to an indisposition which obliged her to rest in the country air. Everyone was well aware that neither the country nor any sort of air was likely to cure the broken heart she had suffered at the hands of the Marquis of Fane. He had grown bored with her when the court returned to London at the beginning of April. By the end of the month, everyone knew of her feelings and his indifference, and had listened to her continual cry that she wished she was dead. That she had given up the chase and retired to the country was a relief to those who were bored by her complaints. At the same time, they all agreed that the Marquis had, as usual, behaved badly. He might have guessed before he started his flirtation, if that was what it was, that Lady Isabel was the clinging sort.
"It is no excuse that she is a damned good-looking woman," another club member said ruminatively. "All Fane's women are that. It is just that he is so insensitive to other people's feelings that he has no idea of the painful consequence of his interest, which never lasts long."
Those listening to the two old gentlemen found themselves wishing that their interest in women brought them even half the results that the Marquis achieved so easily. It seemed to those who were sipping their brandy and considering how they should spend their evening that the Marquis had much more fun out of life than they did. That was a thought that was galling, to say the least of it. The Marquis, with an expertise which was as remarkable as everything else he did, turned his horses at the end of St. James's Street towards Carlton House. Actually, he was thinking it was rather a bore that the Prince had sent for him when he had intended on returning to his house in Berkeley Square to change for his dinner engagement with Lady Abbott. She had commanded his attention last night at Devonshire House because the gown she wore was so transparent that when she entered the room he had, for one startled moment, thought that she was completely naked. He must have met Lady Abbott on a number of previous occasions, but he had never before noticed that her figure was outstanding, until the transparency of her gown had been brought so forcibly to his notice. It was then that he decided she was worth more than a casual glance, and there was no doubt that the lady in question was only too willing. Her dark hair and slanting green eyes reminded him of a panther. And he found when he talked with her in the garden that she could flirt provocatively.